ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्तधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वैषिणी। Okay, we're on verse 20, chapter 6. Yatro paramate chittam, yatro paramate chittam, niruddham yoga sevaya, niruddham yoga sevaya, yatra chayvatmanatmanam, yatra chayvatmanatmanam, pashyan atmani tushyati, pashyan atmani tushyati, yatra uparamate chittam niruddham yoga sevaya yatra cha eva atmana atmanam pashyan atmani tushyati. In the previous verse, he gave the example of just like a light, a flame, that's in a windless spot, protected spot, spot protected from the wind, how it doesn't waver at all. It remains steady. Like that, the yogi whose mind is yatachittasya, whose mind is absorbed or whose mind is held in the hand, is under one's control. For that one who's meditating, like that is the mind of the yogi, the one who is meditating on the self, okay, or the one whose mind is abiding in the self. So here he says, Shankara introduces this verse. He says, from the strength of yoga abhyasa, means from the strength of repeated nididhyasana meditation, yoga abhyasa palat, ekagri bhutam nivata pradipa kalpam sat. The person's mind becomes single-pointed, just like the lamp, which is in a place that was free from wind. Okay? From the strength of repeated contemplation, repeated focusing the mind on the self. And so here he says, he's going to describe it now. Yatra, so yatra means yasmin kale. At which time, when, the chittam, the mind, which is niruddham, the mind which itself is mastered, means the mind is in your control, rather than controlling you, taking you wherever it wants to go, where the mind is held. Niruddham means from niruddha, it means to be able to hold, to restrain. Restrain means you have a choice. You can let the mind go or you can hold the mind. You have the freedom to do either one. Let the mind just wander, like the mind can like to wander and think and imagine and do whatever it wants to do. The mind is free to do that. And you might say, you might want to rein the mind in to have it be still or to be thinking about something or doing something. You have a choice. So the mind is in your control. That's niruddham. Okay? So the mind which is niruddham, and how does it become niruddham yoga sevaya? Through that seva here just means practice. Through the practice of contemplation, through the practice of meditation. Sometimes when we think through the practice of contemplation, I'll talk about this in a minute. Sometimes we just think about the practice of nididhyasana, where I'm sitting, you know, in a yoga position and resolving my mind in Brahman and just sitting with the non-dual self. There's nothing wrong with that. That's a beautiful thing. But nididhyasana, contemplation, has a wider scope also. I can be looking out at the world and seeing Ishvara, seeing myself as Ishvara. That's also nididhyasana. Nididhyasana can be happening all of the time, you know, whether you're looking whether you're using your sense organs to perceive the world or whether you're reining your sense organs in and reining the mind in just to be with the Satchitatma, just to be with the conscious being, you know, just yourself as pure as Brahman, just as pure consciousness. Or you can be with yourself as Ishwara. So either way is Nididhyasana. So here, so when you think of the practice of contemplation, you should think of it in terms of bringing your knowledge, the knowledge that you gain at the time of teaching, to the forefront, so that what the mind is doing at that given time, because here it says yetra, so when the mind is in, you know, through the practice of yoga, through the practice of contemplation, that mind which is niruddha, which is really held in one's hand, he says, that mind, uparamate, that mind resolves. It resolves into what? Resolves into the self. The truth of the mind, it's like saying the pot resolves into the clay. There's not much resolving there. It doesn't have very much distance to go. There's not much for that mind to do in terms of resolving the clay, the pot resolving into the clay. So for the mind to resolve into the Atma, which is its very being, it's a matter of knowledge. It's not a matter of doing. It's a matter of recognizing the fact. What does the pot have to do to resolve into clay is to recognize I am clay. Right? Right? It's knowledge. It's knowledge. So to recognize, for the mind to resolve into the Satchit, the awareness that I am, it's recognition of the reality. It's recognition of the reality of just of Satchit, the conscious being that I am, just in pure, in terms of the pure being, without the Maya, without the Namarupa, without the names and forms, or it's recognition of the same Satchit, without any wavering and stuff. There's an inside Satchit, conscious being, and an outside Satchit, or a Satchit which I need to, the mind can go dunk itself into and then come out and then experience the world. When you're experiencing the world, it's the same Satchit. But it has to be recognized. So this upadamate, this resolution, is a resolution that's brought about by knowledge. So here it says, at that time when the mind resolves, means abides in the self through self-recognition. Right? So it's abiding in the self through self-recognition. That mind which is controlled through repeated practice, through yoga sevaya, through the practice of yoga, through the practice of contemplation, you know, one other thing. When the unfoldment, when teaching takes place, now, like now, when the pramana is being wielded, the mind is brought into a state, because of the pramana, of contemplation. Nididhyasana itself, contemplation, happens at the very time of teaching, at those moments when the words that are being spoken resolve into that aha, where you see what's being said. It's no longer the words. The words resolve into that recognition. That's the lakshana. The words are pointing. They're pointing to that reality. And so the moment the mind sees that, that's jnanam. That's knowledge. And that is nididhyasana. So nididhyasana, contemplation is happening all of the time during the teaching itself. But when the teaching is not going on, then what is the nididhyasana? It is those moments of seeing, when I'm resolving my mind into the reality of my knowledge, into what I know, right? And so that knowledge itself is, nididhyasana is the knowledge itself, right? And the knowledge itself is not away or separate from the experience. Like, for instance, if I have now, with my eyes, I have knowledge of that painting. I have a vritti that is true to the painting. Right? Now, in order for me to have pratyaksha, a direct, immediate experience of that painting, I need my eyes to look at the painting so that I can have a vritti, a thought modification of the painting. Right? That's how I get direct knowledge of the painting. I use my eyes and I see, the mind takes on the shape, the form of the painting, and then I have direct knowledge of the painting through sense perception. Now, what if I go out of the room? Then I can't have direct knowledge of the painting, but I can have a memory of the painting, and I can bring the image of the painting back into my mind. And I have had previous knowledge of the painting, right? So now I can talk about the painting and tell you what the painting was like and describe it to you and all of that. But I no longer am having direct knowledge of the painting, the direct experience of the painting, right? It's indirect now. I mean, it's in memory. It's memory. Knowledge is still taking place, but it's not direct immediate. Now, with self-knowledge, there's a difference, because when you go out of this room into the next room, yourself is still there. Right? There's no getting away from the self. And so once the self is recognized, the direct, immediate, what we call aparoksha jnanam, because the self is not an object to look at, that's the difference between knowledge of an object and knowledge of the self. The self is not something objectified. But once that ignorance is removed, wherever you go, the self is there. There's no distance. So there is nothing to stop the mind that has recognized the self from continuing to recognize the self in a direct, immediate way, because the self is present as aparoksha. So this is when he's going to be doing something with this in these two verses. So here, through the practice of nididhyasana, right, the mind resolves into that self. Through continual practice of the nididhyasana, the mind just naturally resolves into the self because of recognition. Mm. It's not that the self goes away, but the mind is so used to looking out at names and forms or activities or engaging in the world that is where its focus always is. And so it misses the aparoksha, the immediacy of the self. But through shravana, where nididhyasana continually takes place, class after class after class, and through your own contemplation, not just sitting in meditation, but throughout the day. Throughout the day, through your experience, that continual nididhyasana, which means bringing your knowledge to the forefront. That is what your mind is seeing. You're seeing this as Ishvara. You're recognizing it as Ishvara. You're recognizing the Atma as Satchit Ananda. You're recognizing the Atma as Brahman. That's the nididhyasana, which continues to go on. Now, when that becomes natural to the mind, right, when the mind rests there, it abides there, then it says, when that's the case, yatra, cha eva atmana atmanam pashyan, it says, then the seeing that one sees, there's the seeing of the Atma, means the Atma is Brahman, the Atma as the infinite changeless self, by the self. One sees the self by the self. Atmana, Atmanam, Pashyan. That by the self means by the antakarna, by the mind that has antakarna shuddhi. So I say, in English, I'd say, you know, I see the self by the self. Means with my mind, which is now not engaged, it's niruddha. I have control of that mind through meditation, through nididhyasana. I've recognized myself. That being the self, that being the case, the self, which is self-evident, and the very self of the mind, that self is appreciated, right? The self, which is the self of the mind, is appreciated by the mind. Right? It's like saying the clay is appreciated by the pot, which is itself clay, right? See, there's not the self. The truth of the pot is clay. The pot appreciates the clay. You know, the pot itself appreciates the clay. The pot, which is clay, appreciates the clay. Your mind, which has for its being, for its truth, the Atma, appreciates the Atma. So the Atma, the self, being seen by the mind, it's like saying the clay being seen, you know, the clay being seen by the pot. the self being seen by the mind, which has the mind as its very being, as its very self. So seeing that, then Atmani Tushyate, it revels in the Atma. That's the home for the mind. So the mind's home, the mind's ananda, the mind's source of ananda, the mind's source of joy, the mind's source of love, the mind's source of fullness, everything that we look for in the world, right? Everything that you want to gain in the world, I want to be loved, I want to be cared for, I want to be full, I want to be complete, I want to be happy, you know. I want to feel all is well with me, you know, I want to feel cared, all of these things, which every human being wants. If you're not getting it, you want it. If you have it, you don't want to lose it. That's what we all are all seeking. So that is the what we want is the experience of the self. We want the wholeness, which is our own swarupa. We want the wholeness, the well-being that is our own self. And the problem is when the mind goes out trying to find that self in the world, it gets very frustrated and agitated because there are obstructions. You can't do something in the world and just get your way. I think I'll just have this and then that will make me happy. It isn't like that. Somebody else might want that too. There's all kinds, hundreds and hundreds of obstacles that stop the mind from being able to just have its way. Let me have this so that I can be happy. And then, of course, now that I have it, let me continue to want it. If I can, I have to have it. You know, I want to have this so that I can be happy. Now I have it. But in order for me to continue being happy by having it, I have to continue to want it. What if I have it and I don't want it anymore? That's not making me happy anymore. So there's endless complications. And everybody experiences it in the world that every time you get something that you think will make you happy, you have a moment of happiness and only a moment. And you're left with the object. Often you're left with the object, but then you don't want it anymore. You're left with it. Or you want it and you're filled with fear because somebody can take it away from you. So you have it, you really want it, but now you're worried because somebody can take it away from you. And so now this object is causing you a great deal of pain. The object that you love is causing you pain because it's not you. The object is not you. Therefore, it can walk away from you. Right? Therefore, it's not you. It has a mind of its own. Well, human beings or animals, it's a real problem. Human beings and animals can walk away from you. Objects, at least, you have a better chance. You can hang on to it. Or plants, you know. Plants that die. They can only die because you don't want them. But they're not going to run away from you. But it's a huge problem. The jnani does not have that problem. Because the source of the ananda, what you're seeking out here, is really the wholeness of your own being. And so for the one who has recognized that, the one who has that chitta niruddham, that control of the mind, through continual nididhyasana, but shravana manana nididhyasana. Shravana means exposing yourself to that teaching where nididhyasana, the mind is resolved for you by the teacher, through the wielding of the pramana. So there's nididhyasana, manana, the thinking it through, all of your doubts, doing all of the manana, that resolves the mind, nididhyasana. Right? The resolution of the mind even through manana. That's nididhyasana because then you see. Manana means bringing up the doubts. Why can't it be this way? Why can't it be that way? Well, it must be this way or that way. The mind gets worried and concerned. It worries and it thinks it through and thinks it through and thinks it through and then it sees. Nididhyasana. And then nididhyasana itself is just bringing that vision to the forefront, you know, either through sitting in contemplation or just through your experience of the world, nididhyasana. So nididhyasana is something that is constant. It's constant throughout the day. And so that's the yoga sevaya. Seva means service. So you can even look at it like that. Your life is in service of nididhyasana. Now another way to say it, your life is in service of this knowledge. That's the sadhana. Is just simply seeing the truth of it so that your mind can be free. You can't do something to make the mind free. The freedom for the mind is in knowledge. and the recognition of the freedom of my own nature. That's what makes the mind free. And so for a person who has that freedom, the freedom is brought about by the fact that the Atma, the self, by its very swarupa, by its very nature, by what it is. Swarupa means what the thing actually is, what its truth is, what its true nature. Rupa sometimes translates as form or nature. Swa means one's own. So when we say swarupa, the English translation is one's own nature. But what it means is what that thing actually is. What is the satyam? What is the reality of the thing? That's its swarupa. Like the reality of the pot is the clay. Clay is the swarupa of the pot because that is what is there in truth. That's what it is, what the thing is. So your swarupa, your nature, Satchitananda, is Brahman. Your nature is consciousness, which is existence, which is limitless. Changeless, limitless consciousness. That's your swarupa. Okay. And so the one who has recognized my own nature, my own swarupa, that person seeing the Atma by the mind, the mind's recognition of the self, which is its own self, that one revels in the Atma, because the Atma is the source of ananda, is the source of wholeness. Because a better way of even saying, the Atma is what I seek. The Atma is what every human being seeks. What do we want? I want to be happy. I want to be loved. What is the locus of that? That's the big problem. That's everybody's problem. Where is the love? You know, where is it hiding? Is it this person or that person? Or is it in this situation or that situation? It's so ephemeral because it's like the horizon. You go toward it and it's not there. It's illusory. And yet you know so well what it is. Because sometimes your mind enjoys a little shanti, and the wholeness of yourself will be predominant, manifest in the mind, and you'll say, this is it. This is it. This is who I really am. This is who I want to be all of the time. Because the mind at that time is not causing you problems. In fact, that self is who you are all of the time. It's just it's competing for attention with the pain in the mind. As we'll see, if we get to the verse, we'll see it's dukkha samyoga viyoga. What is yoga actually? Meditation actually? It's the separating from the association with sorrow. That'll be a beautiful verse when we get to that. So not saying getting rid of the sorrow. It's the viyoga, separating from one's association with dukkha, association with sorrow. You can have sorrow in the mind, but you are not that sorrow. There's the viveka. It's the recognition of that ananda, the recognition of that wholeness, no matter what the good. That's a different thing. So here he says, there's other verses that will be coming like this too. Atmana atmanam pashyan atmani tushyati. By the self, seeing the self, by the self, he revels in the self. And another way of taking this, seeing the self by the self, the vritti, the thought modification is necessary to remove the ajnanam, to remove the ignorance that causes the mind to take itself to be the Atma. That ignorance has to be removed, and you need the mind for that, because the mind is the one that's suffering. The mind is the one that has ignorance. The mind has to remove the ignorance through the vritti, through the thought modification, through knowledge. But the self is aparoksha. Your self is self-shining. And so, really, the self only knows the self by the self. The self is not an object to be illumined, like the painting or like the rug. Your self isn't an object there to be illumined. The self is the luminary. Consciousness itself is self-evident, self-effulgent. So nothing's going to illuminate, right? But the ignorance of the mind can be removed that stops the mind from taking that self-evident me to be it. It's taking that which is shining, the consciousness, that makes my mind, the thoughts in my mind, known. The mind says, I am that consciousness, and therefore whatever thought I have, whatever mood I have, whatever emotion I have, that is me. That's the ajnanam. When that ajnanam is removed, the mind recognizes itself as a vritti. It recognizes itself as being known, as being experienced, and it recognizes the self-evident consciousness, which is me and which is its very truth, as being indestructible, not being something that belongs to the destructible vritti, the destructible thought modification, the changing thought modification. It recognizes the self-shining of me. Not that it is illumining me, it is differentiating itself from the self, from the me that is self-evident. And so that's why, in fact, the self is seen only by the self. But on the other hand, the ajnanam, the ignorance, is being removed from the vritti. Because the vritti, though it's illumined by the self, is responsible for identifying itself with the self. Right? And so that's the ignorance that has to be removed. And so that thing, once that ignorance is removed from the mind, then what does the mind do? It revels in the self. Because it recognizes that its very self is the source of wholeness, is the source of ananda. Its very being is the source of ananda. And so, fine, good, I stay there, I stay home. That's where I stay. That's where I revel. And then, staying home, I experience the world. Now, that's interesting, too. Staying home, I experience the world. There's nowhere I can go that I am not home. Right? Because the mind, even if it goes, it doesn't matter where it goes. It can't get away from me. So wherever the mind goes, I am home. And the mind revels in that home, which it can never get away from, even if it wanted to. You know, in the Upanishad, if I send my mind to the moon, I'm already there. The self is already there before the mind gets there. Send my mind to the moon. Only takes not even a split second for the mind to get to the moon and have that vritti, thought modification of the moon. Not even a split second. But way before it gets there, I'm already there. So wherever the mind goes, I am. And so for the jnani, the one who has the mind niruddham in your hand, means the mind is not capable of taking you for a ride anymore. For such a mind, that mind revels in the, who's recognized the self, that mind revels in the self. Mm-hmm. So he goes on now with more explanation of this. Sukhamatyantikam yattad buddhigrahyam atindriyam veti yatra na chai vayam stitas chalati tatvataha sukham atyantikam yat tad buddhigrahyam atindriyam ati indriyam veti yatra nacha eva ayam stitaha chalati tatvataha. In the second line, ayam veti, yatra ayam veti, says when one knows, when a person, ayam, when this person, the yogi, when this person knows that which is sukham atyantikam, absolute sukha, means absolute ananda. Atyantikam means limitless, anantam, limitless ananda. So when one knows that which is sukham atyantikam sukham, yet that which is sukham atyantikam sukham, limitless ananda, And that limitless ananda, which is buddhigrahyam, buddhigrahyam, that is something which can be grasped by the buddhi, but by the intellect, by the mind. It can be grasped by the mind, but it is ati indriyam. It is something which is beyond the sense organs. Consciousness is not something that we can perceive as an object. So ati means beyond. Indriya means sense organs. So the atma, the self, is ati indriyam. It's beyond the sense organs, but it's something that can be grasped, that can be recognized, buddhi, by the mind. Okay, so when one knows that atma, that self, then this person, stittaha, who is abiding in that, having seen that, having recognized that, then that person, chalati tatvataha, na. That person, na eva, can never go away, chalati, move away from the truth. It's impossible for that person to move away from the truth, from tatvataha, from that tasala affix gives the fifth case, can move away from the tatva. Tatva is the satyam, the reality, that which is real. Right? That person can't move away from that which is real. So it says. So here, this verse is building off, all of these next verses are building off of the first verse that we just did. So, first word, well, let's do it like this. First of all, what is ultimately yourself, the Atma, is ultimately the ultimate subject. Who you are has to be ultimately the subject who cannot be objectified. If I can objectify something, look at it, describe it, have a subject-object relationship with it, then that's not me. I may have it may have been an upadhi, a conditioning adjunct, which I've taken to be me. Like the physical body, for instance, I say, I am the physical body. But upon analysis, the physical body is something which is objectified. My thoughts are objectified. My sense perceptions are objectified. They're known. They change. I can describe them. I have a subject-object relationship with them. You can't have a subject-object relationship with yourself because it's you. You can't be objectifying yourself. The thing is, you are self-luminous, so you don't need to objectify yourself in order for you to be known. Because just like the sun doesn't need to bring in another sun to light it up, consciousness doesn't need to bring in another consciousness to light it up. So consciousness is self-luminous. But it can't objectify itself. Here's some consciousness, aware of some consciousness, as there's something in between to make it a subject-object relationship. I can't have that subject-object because I am the subject, right? If I can objectify it, then ultimately that's not me. So I have to say, ultimately, I am the subject that cannot be objectified. So atindriya means that which is not objectifiable. I can't see through my sense perception. I can't, even from the manas, I can't, from the mind, I can't have an object self. But the self is buddhigrahyam. It's something that can be recognized by the mind, by the buddhi. And why is that? Because the self is self-evident consciousness, and the buddhi, the mind, is not away from the self. The sense organs can only see the varieties of name and form. I can hear sounds, I can see form, I can touch that which has it, the things that have touch, things that can be felt, I can touch, I can smell things that have fragrance. So the sense organs are only good for seeing objects of one sort or another. But the buddhi has for its very content self-evident consciousness. And so the self-evident consciousness that illumines the buddhi, right, the buddhi can be directed to recognize. Remember, the buddhi is always commenting on and gaining knowledge or understanding its experience. So the buddhi, if taught through lakshana, You know, through it, the buddhi can have the self pointed out to it. The buddhi can have your own self pointed out to you because the self of the buddhi happens to be the very content of the buddhi, the reality of the buddhi, but itself not changing, right? And so through teaching methodology, you can recognize the truth of yourself as the one that illumines the buddhi, because the buddhi is not away from the self. So the whole teaching makes the self accessible, recognizable to the buddhi, to the mind, because the self is self-evident. So buddhi grahyam, it can be grasped by the mind because of the teaching, right? The teaching differentiates the atma from that which is coming and going, the very nature of the buddhi. It differentiates the buddhi from its own self. It's a satya mitya. So that which can be recognized by the buddhi, whose nature is limitless sukha, limitless ananda. Hi. There is no... What do you need? It's okay. She has a little eye problem. It's okay. Okay. I know.
She wants more.
No, no, she'll be all right. She's not feeling that well, that's why. Okay. So, the sukha, they put an art in there. Sukham authenticum. Actually, Swamiji does something really nice in his Bhasha on this differentiating the sukha, the ananda, which is one's swarupa, which is one's nature, from the experiences of sukha that we have in the world. The experience of sukha that we have in the world of pleasure is always bordered by pain. That's why we always say sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha. Because any sukha, any pleasure in the world comes to an end. And it's variegated. There's sukha, more sukha, little more sukha, little more sukha, magnificent sukha. But that sukha comes to an end. And so that sukha is not atyantikam. It's not limitless. The sukha which is limitless, it doesn't have a beginning. It doesn't have an end. And there is nothing in the creation that fits that definition. And so that what that means is that the ananda that you experience, the different forms of pleasure in sukha that you experience in the creation that are coming and going, that sukha is something that is related to and a product, really, of your vrittis. In other words, when the mind is in different states of calm, different states of relaxation, how we will say is that in that state of relaxation, the mind is reflecting your own ananda in a variety of different ways. Right? And when the mind, because a variety of different ways means you can be, you know, peaceful, or you can be blissfully happy, or you can be feeling compassion, or you can be feeling joy and laughter, you can be feeling love or happiness. But in all of these states, there's subtle differences, and there's more or less feeling loving, feeling overwhelmed with love. That's what I mean. It's variegated, right? And there is more or less. That's because the relaxation, in all of them, there's a relaxation of the vritti, but there's subtle differences. So this is your own being really being reflected off of a relaxed mind. And that relaxed mind is giving its own take on the sukha, on the nature of the sukha. That's why it's variegated, and that's why it's more or less. But pervasive to that is what we call the atyantikam sukha, the ananta, the limitless sukha, which is the nature of the self. And that sukha can't be compared to the variegated sukhas that come and go. Mm. That's why it's so helpful when you do have these little experiences of sukha, because the mind is relaxed and quiet and not being engaged in things that produce, you know, pain or distress or the negative spectrum, which has to do with tension in the mind. All different forms of tension, and we have different names for these different levels of tension. Some of the different names are something like dislike, anxiety, hatred, jealousy, you know, contempt and disgust. We have all kinds of names for the different varieties of tension that the mind, you know, can undergo. And those states of tension, you know, depression, all of them, hurt, these states of tension are undesirable. They're things that we want to go away from. Whereas states of relaxation are desirable because the self is reflecting. So, like, kind of like we use the example of the water bucket, of the sun reflecting off a clear water bucket, the reflection seems to be true to the sun, and so that water is really comfortable, right? And that reflection is comfortable. It seems like me, right? So, say my mind is very calm and quiet. I seem like me. I'm identified with mind, right? I say I am my mind. But my mind, if my mind is clear and quiet and relaxed, then it's not taking on any type of tension or attitudes or feelings, creating feelings that are different than my swarupa, different than my nature. And so when my mind is calm, then I feel like myself. Since I'm identified with the mind, if I'm not identified with the mind and I recognize my own swarupa, then if the mind is agitated, I'm still calm, I'm still me. But that isn't the case. That isn't the case for an Ajnani. Whatever the mind is doing, that is me. And so we want the mind to be very different states of calmness, because my own being, my own nature, you know, is not being distorted much. Is not being very distorted by that mind. You see what I mean? This is really, it's so important. Because that's why we're always chasing after sukha. Let me have this so I can be happy. Let me have that so I can be happy. Because I want my mind to be calm. Because I feel comfortable in a calm mind. If a desire is not being fulfilled, my mind becomes very tense. Worried. Because I projected my ananda out there. And so the mind becomes tense and worried. And then I don't feel like myself. Because the mind is producing an emotion, which I've identified with, which is not true to me. You see, so this is the samsara. All this is what samsara is. For the jnani, this is not this is not oneself. For the jnani, oneself is the ananda itself, is the atma that is there illumining the agitated and peaceful mind, whatever it may be. But there's that discrimination, that differentiation has been made. And so I am the authentica sukham. I am, that's who I am. It never changes. Nobody can change it. It's a constant. And that is something that has been grasped by the buddhi. Mm. That's jnanam. The buddhi has seen it. It has differentiated myself, whose swarupa, whose very nature is authentica sukham, is that changeless fullness, from itself. You know, and from all of the names and forms in the creation. And so, that being the case, once that's been recognized, the very self of the buddhi has been recognized, right? Then, wherever that buddhi goes, wherever the mind goes, it can't get away from that reality. It can't get away from that truth. And that's the jnana, that is the nishtha. Wherever it goes, that truth is there. Wherever the mind goes, that self is there. There's no possibility of getting away from it. You can't get away from it anyway. In reality, you're never away from it. It's like advaita. That's the only thing that's there. You see what? It's okay, dude.
Must be a little low.
Maybe you're a little animal, a little fly or something. That's the only reality that is there, right? and that's the truth anyway. But because of Ajnanam, just the power of Ajnanam, what it can do. You know, Ajnanam covers that reality as though, and makes you behave as though you're a jiva in the world, you know, and your ananda is out there. It's all a rope snake. You know, the whole thing boils down to rope snake. If you mistake, you're walking along, you mistake a rope for a snake, your whole emotional life is generated by the snake, not by the rope. There is no snake. There's only a rope there, but you've mistaken it for a snake because you didn't see the rope. Now you see the snake. What you're relating to is the snake, not the rope. And so all the emotions that you're having are generated by the ajnanam, the ignorance of the rope. For us, all of the emotions that we're having, all of them, are generated by ignorance of the self. All of the dukkha, all of the sorrow, all of the hurt, all of the suffering, all of the pain, it's all generated by ignorance of the self. Because what's generating all of that dukkha is my wanting myself that I've projected onto the world. I want that. I don't want that. I want my ananda. I want myself. That's what I want. And so I believe that it exists in the object, and so I must have that object in order to be happy, and then of course I suffer because something's stopping me from being able to have it, and I create all kinds of suffering for myself. But there comes a time when your mind doesn't do that anymore because it's not worth it. You see through that whole thing. And so then you still go after the objects because it's in your prarabdha. It's in your karma to go after these objects and to do this and do that. It's all the unfoldment of your prarabdha. But your mind does all of it, engages fully in all of it, sitting at home reveling in the self. So I mean, the mind is enjoying the self as it's engaging in the world. That's a Mahatma, that's a Jivan Mukta. Enjoying the self, you engage in the world. Because no matter where your mind is, you are there. There's no possibility of getting away from your knowledge. This is Ishvara, and the self of this is your being. So where to escape? How can you escape your knowledge? There's nothing left out. That's why all of the things, when a person gains knowledge and gains clarity, then the problems that we have to deal with are just habitual problems that and suffering that is there in the mind, traumas that we've had growing up that we have to work through, you know, and attitudes that we have toward others and in the world that cause pain. We can have attitudes that create pain. We can have traumas and conscious traumas that create pain. We can have physical ailments that create pain. So all of these things then we have to take care of, and that becomes part of our sadhana, is taking care of these things. But even as I take care of these things, myself is not in pain, right? And if myself is in pain, that's because I've identified myself with the experience I'm having. So then I have to bring back my knowledge. That's the nididhyasana. Every time you bring back your knowledge, that is a moment of nididhyasana. Nididhyasana means seeing. If there's no meditation is seeing. There's no self to travel to. There's nowhere to go. There's no self that's away from you. So the nididhyasana is recognition. You gain knowledge at the time of teaching. Nididhyasana takes place because you see. Nididhyasana takes place throughout the day, every moment that you see. Because the Atma is not away from you. Ishvara is not away from you. So you either see it or you don't. When you see it, it's nididhyasana. When you don't, then you have to bring your mind back to see it. Then when you don't, then all of a sudden the sadhana buttons go off. Time to bring my mind back to that reality. Now say there's some area that you're fuzzy on. Shravana, manana. You know, say you have questions, well, that's not true in this case or that case. Manana. That area is where you have to do some manana. And see, is that true? Is what you say true? Is your understanding correct? So it's all a pursuit of clarity, of knowledge. Because in reality, there's no problem. The problem is ajnanam. And ajnanam, ignorance, is very, very powerful. It's not just some little ignorance. Ignorance that can create a snake out of a rope and then allow me to have a total emotional reaction and to the snake. You know, that's how powerful the ignorance is. It creates a reality for me, and then I live out that reality. That's very, very powerful. Yeah. But the ignorance does not change, have the power to change what is actually going on. What is actually going on? The reality is the same, with or without the ignorance. It's just those that are bound by the ignorance needlessly suffer. Needlessly suffer because the suffering is not based upon reality. It's needless suffering, but not uncaused suffering. It's not like the person's insane or crazy. They're suffering because of the ajnanam. See what I mean? We suffer, even in the relative world, we suffer from ajnanam all the time. That's why people go to therapy to work out, you know, their projections. They see somebody raise their eyebrow in the wrong way. Right? And a whole world of projection about what is really must be going on there takes place, right? And then I have a huge emotional reaction based upon this raised eyebrow that set off this reality in me. And then when I find out that, oh, she wasn't really raising her eyebrow, there was just a little tick there. And you see, oh my gosh, she didn't raise her eyebrow. Actually, nothing happened at all. She wasn't thinking about anything. Oops. And then the Maya goes away. When you know, the Maya goes away. We have Maya too. We have a, you know, tremendous power. For Bhagavan has an infinitely, we have, you know, in a limited way. Projection is Maya. You know? And projection, when projection takes place, that is the reality that we live in. We live in our projections. But the projections, you know, if they are projections, are based in ignorance. That's why once you know what is the reality of the projection goes away, as do the emotions that were caused by the projections. It's very, very interesting stuff. Let's stop. Purnamidah, Purnamidam, Purnat, Purnamudachyate, Purnasya Purnamadaya, Purnameva Vasishyate, Om Shanti Shanti Shanti, Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha, Harihi Om. Thank you.
Well, isn't the the technical definition of contemplation really sitting just with yourself and differentiating the mind from your own being and then staying there, focusing like that?
Well, that's a limited definition of it. That's why an approach on the buddhi is so good, what Shankara does. And he talks about it in other places too in the Bhāṣa, to really understand what nididhyāsana is, so that you don't feel that confined to just sitting. And nididhyāsana is bringing knowledge to the forefront, seeing. You have to remember that the reality is not away from you. To go there or resolve into it as though there's some distance. Nididhyasana is recognition of reality. It's the seeing of it. There's no distance. You know, and so to bring the mind, to be able to bring the mind to that seeing, whenever you do that, is nididhyasana.
Yeah, well, it's like...
Swamiji said, you know, I resolve my mind between thoughts. Thoughts means, you know, what I'm... Where does the mind's engaged? Then when it's not engaged, what is it doing? Well, it's being with the self. You know, just reveling in the reality. So if you think that you have to go sit somewhere, and there's not that anything is wrong with sitting either. That's a wonderful pastime, and it's very well, and it's enjoyable, and it's useful. And it is nididhyasana. It's not that it's not nididhyasana. It is. It very much is. But so is, at this moment, seeing this as Ishvara, recognizing it as Ishvara. At this moment, focusing on my own presence as pervasive. In fact, myself as the pervasive substance of all of this. And in Drikrisha Viveka, Shankara, he actually is the one who wrote that. He talks about the different types of samadhi, like open-eye samadhi. You don't have to set what he calls sahaja samadhi, just the natural samadhi of being a jnani, where you're always recognizing this as your being. Nothing ever covers your being. That's samadhi. There's open-eye samadhi, where you're walking around doing nididhyasana by recognizing all of this is nothing but yourself, is nothing but Ishvara. Then there's just the practice of samadhi, resolving the mind just into yourself as, you know, non-dual, bringing the mind into the self. So you have to loosen up a little bit to understand the truth of it, you know.
Well, the intensity of teaching, though, is like that, too, when the pramana is...
Nididhyasana is happening throughout as the teaching takes place.
Do you think, like, continually, continually sort of doing the subject-object drisha, do you think that can stop you from recognizing that you are the whole? I mean, because there's another step to that.
There's another step to it, but that's not, I'm not at all talking about walking around doing drisha.
No, I'm not either. I'm just talking about drikrisha. Because Edward said, you know, like, is that nididhyasana making this differentiation between yourself and the mind, which is basically drikrisha, right?
That initially, that's why drikrisha is considered, it's very important initially because of the red-hot iron ball syndrome. There's a totally identity between myself and the body. And so this process of differentiation of what's viveka. Viveka is a big word in teaching. You know, but what has to happen, you can't be left with drikrisha. You have to end up with satyamitya. That's where it ends up. Because satyamitya, then you see that is the advaita. Satyamitya is clay pot, where I see this is nothing but awareness. This is nothing but me. On every level, I understand the relationship between name. Now, Swamiji only uses name. He doesn't even use form anymore.
Meaning.
Yeah, meaning. Name and meaning. Word and meaning.
What?
Word and, well, never mind. We can say name and form. This whole creation is names and forms of forms. We're just, see, there is no such thing as a form. A form breaks down into smaller forms. So form is really nothing but a name, because there's nothing really there.
Yeah.
So we'll call it a name.
Yeah.
But in this creation that we experience, there's, we have to be able to see that it is only consciousness, and that all of these names and forms are nothing but consciousness, like clay pot. You know, and that's the Satyamitya. Now to get there, though, you need the Drikdrisha, and then you also need to all of the prakriyas, all of the teaching methodologies to make you see that there really is no substance here. There's no what we call a vastu. A vastu is something that is a reality, something that is real, something that really exists is a vastu.
But see, with Drikdrisha, it seems to me, and I could very well be wrong, but it seems to me like the recognition of that subject-object differentiation is very very clear and very aparoksha, right? And then we go to the next, you know, the next sort of level of prakriyas or something, and taking the whole creation apart. Which to me is, how to say this, it's not aparoksha. It's, yeah, that's true. It's like, it's conceptual. I mean, it's, and it makes sense. And yeah, that's true. That's all true. And yet it doesn't seem the satyatvam or whatever, you know, the of, it, that doesn't seem self-evident to me. That's not approach to me.
But, well, it could be, though, I think. Mm-hmm. Because, see, another thing is this might not be the catching point in your buddhi. But for many people, the idea that there is matter, material matter, you know, is very real. That this mm-hmm. is matter.
Yeah.
That this actually is, has been, has existence.
No, I understand that it doesn't. I mean, but it's kind of conceptual understanding. It's like, yeah, that makes true. It can break down. It'll break down, and you can't find it, and you know.
No, but it's more than conceptual. It's a fact. Like for instance, things that come into being and go out of being, if they're bordered by non-existence, they can't themselves enjoy the existence. That's just not theoretical.
Mm-hmm.
That's an actual reality. You have to see the truth of that in reference to all of the objects you experience. You have to be able to say, well, that is true.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that anything that occupies space is infinitely divisible.
Mm-hmm.
That it's that's an actual fact in reference to all of the things that you experience.
Mm-hmm.
That any form that takes up space, right, is going to be different from the substance, from what's inside of it. To get to the substance, you have to take the form off. You can't just fill the substance with smaller substances. These are realities.
Yeah.
They're not just theories.
No.
They're
I get that they're realities. I get that they're realities, but what I keep sort of wondering is there, you know, the aha of recognizing yourself versus objects, then is it the same aha of recognizing, oh, these objects really have myself as their being? And I just don't see, that aha hasn't happened. And I'm just saying, is
but
it something like it's a similar kind of aha or as the Drikdrisha aha? Or?
I think it is an aha.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, yourself is not going to become objectifiable when you're looking at the world.
Right.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
It's aparoksha. Mm-hmm. It's consciousness, which is being.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look, when you recognize yourself, and then now you include all the names and forms of your perception, you can differentiate or clearly see that the consciousness which you are can't be separated from any part of the perception. Well, that we have to work on them, because you can see that this is only consciousness. But now, okay, say you say that, now this is the problem, and this is why some of these other prakriyas are necessary. You can see this is only consciousness. There is nothing here that's away from my own presence. My own presence is pervasive to what I'm perceiving. But then the next step is, yeah, but I'm only perceiving the vritti in my mind. And the vritti in my mind is pervaded by my knowing, my consciousness. And that's all I'm recognizing, mm-hmm. is the pervasiveness of my consciousness lighting up the thought modification in my mind.
Yeah.
And so I say that I'm pervasive to the thought modification. But what about what the thought modification is of? The thought modification is of that wooden cedar chest. That wooden cedar chest is real. And that wooden cedar chest is different than the subtle vritti I'm having of my mind, that in my mind, which is then pervaded by consciousness. So my satya mitya only will go as far as consciousness in the mind, right? Mm-hmm. And then, so that's the extent of my satya mitya, and I still have this matter hanging out here,
yeah,
right? Well, that's why we now have to take a look at the matter, what we call matter, material, out here, or anywhere, on any level. So is there subtle material? Is there physical material? Is there such a thing as matter? Does it exist? So you say, yes, it exists. I'll say, okay, show it to me. Show it to me. And you won't be able to show it to me. You won't be able to find it. Anything that you give me, I'll make it into smaller and smaller forms.
But that seems conceptual. That part of it seems conceptual to me.
It isn't conceptual.
Uh-huh.
You can make it non-conceptual. Take a chunk of wood, get an axe, you know,
yeah.
Break it all the way down into sawdust,
right.
Then put it in an electron microscope,
right,
you know,
right, right. Yeah.
Then put it through one of these machines that they've got,
yeah.
That 17-mile
machine. But where will you discover the satyam in that? How will you know that that's satyam, other than by that your consciousness pervades the vritti?
The satyam itself is not dependent on the vritti; it's a paroksha. It's not. That doesn't really have anything to do with it. Satyam has nothing to do with the vritti. Satyam is there with or without the vritti.
Yeah,
so you don't have to establish the satyam. What you have to do. Once the satyam is, the reality is known as the atma, that now doesn't need to be established. You know that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What you don't know is the mitya outside of the vritti. Like I would say, you could probably understand the mitya relationship between consciousness and the changing thoughts in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But you don't have the mityatva in reference to the creation of which the vritti is of. Like I have a vritti of the cedar chest, but that vritti of the cedar chest is different than the cedar chest. I can see the mityatva of the vritti, but can I see the mityatva of the cedar chest?
I've sort of thought the problem is the other way around. That everything has for its being, your being. So it's recognizing the satyam in the mitya.
No.
No.
The satyam is self-evident.
Mm-hmm.
What you have to see is that what we call mitya or matter or anything in the creation has no being of its own.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore the being that it enjoys is only the being of the satyam.
But it's that the being that it enjoys is only the being of the satyam.
Because it has no being of its own.
Right, but now is that an aparoksha?
It's aparoksha.
That's aparoksha.
Because the satyam is aparoksha.
See, that's where I have some block or something. I don't see that.
Yeah, no, it was wonderful. I'm so glad this came up. This is...
Seems like one of the things you have to see is that there's no mitya outside of the vritti.
When you say there's no mitya outside of the vritti, we would say that anything within duality, the whole creation is mitya.
Yeah. And the only way you know it is through the vritti. So you can't establish that there is any nitya beyond that knowledge.
Except that what you're saying is, say, the when we're looking at what we call to be matter, even though all you experience is the vritti, that's true, but you say that the vritti is of something, right? So say you have a thought modification of the cedar chest.
You say that,
but there's also a vyavahara there. There's also an empirical reality where we share knowledge of that cedar chest. You have a vritti of it, I have a vritti of it.
And sure. So we can share our relationship to vrittis. We can share the experience of mithya. I'm just saying it seems like it's important in having that recognition to see that there aren't two things. There's not the vritti and the object of the vritti. There's no object of the vritti. There's just the vritti.
But
this is where you get from that whole object consciousness to words and meanings to just knowledge. There are no objects.
The only thing that you have to be careful of there, at least in the how I'm hearing what you're saying, is that when we say vyavaharika satyam, that means an empirical reality. What we mean is that when we look at the infinite manifest knowledge in the form of the creation, that has an empirical reality which all of the jivas are a part. In other words, this cedar chest is not just a product of my personal vritti or your personal vritti.
It's knowledge that exists beyond, say, the jiva.
Yeah.
But it's just knowledge. And knowledge, there's no difference between knowledge and the vritti.
I would say like this. You can say, yes, that's right. It is just knowledge. It's infinite knowledge. It's part of infinite knowledge. Ishwara's knowledge. Included in the infinite manifestation of Ishwara are all of the jivas who have minds which are able to have vrittis. So they have a vritti within the infinite manifestation of knowledge, which gives a shared platform of reality. Right? And so there's, even though Ishwara is also just knowledge, within Ishwara there are jivas who are like their little limited little mini Ishwaras, in the sense that a jiva has some amount of power, some amount of knowledge, you know, some amount of control over maya, like imagination. And so you can have a thought modification of a cedar chest which exists in Ishwara's, as Ishwara's knowledge. And now you have a vritti of that cedar chest, the content of which is something that I can also have a vritti of.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, one.
So, but one more jump here. Mm-hmm. So, what has to happen is that since there seems to be a difference between my vritti and the mityatva of the vritti, I can see that it's just it's something that comes from me, is sustained by me, goes back into me, it's something that comes and goes. It doesn't have reality, but whenever it's there, it doesn't have substantial reality. I am its very being, and I am its existence, I am its knownness. That we can have direct, immediate recognition of. That recognition Ishwara has naturally of the whole infinite universe. The same thing that I have toward my little vritti, that it is me. It's a manifestation of my knowledge. The whole creation is like that from Ishwara's standpoint. So, but now for me, I have to be able to recognize Ishwara as manifest knowledge. You know, to see it as mithya, to see that there's, as Swamiji says, there's only word and meaning, that there's no substance to be found in this creation either. this creation is just manifest knowledge. It's just word and meaning. There's no substance to be found here. And the substance that it has is only Satchit. It has no substance of its own. Everything resolves into consciousness, which is existence.
One of the reasons, I mean, I just want to express my own experience with meditation and a kind of a bias toward the importance of meditation. Is this whole object consciousness is cognitively a way of thinking that's really kind of fixated. And that relationship, the way that the mind defers to that habitual way of thinking is neurological. You know, that has to all be like reconfigured. And it's really hard for that to happen when you don't slow down enough and spend enough time just sitting quietly noticing how the mind creates this illusion. So I don't see how you can do that if you've never meditated.
Well, it depends on how you're defining meditation. You know, that's where, I mean, the whole chapter 6 is on Nididhyasana, but you have to... This vision is, I am the whole, right? And so I have to be able to see this as myself. And so the Nididhyasana is not just about Nirvikalpa Samadhi, resolving the mind, right? It's about recognizing that all of this is consciousness.
I mean, yeah, that's my point, actually, not the Nirvikalpa, but to really see how the mind creates certain kinds of illusions that cause it to take matter to reify everything and to create all this separation and these schisms, in my experience, just takes quite a bit of time being quiet with oneself. Not necessarily sitting in a particular asana with one's eyes closed or whatever, but really being quiet enough and still enough to so you can, the buddhi can see mm-hmm. what is happening.
Yeah, that's right. I think we're all agreed on that.
I haven't heard that's all agreed on, because I hear a lot that kind of like that's associated more with yoga, and that I feel sometimes like it's being said that's the significance of that is being de-emphasized.
I don't know, because it depends on how if you're talking about how I'm talking about it, how I see the whole life as a sadhana. Every moment as a sadhana. What does that mean? It means that when your mind is behaving in a way that is causing you pain or taking you away from your knowledge, you bring your mind back. So what does it mean to bring your mind back is to see. What is seeing? Is Nididhyasana. And so that's what we try to do. Now, sitting in Nididhyasana in the morning, or having your morning meditation routine is a great thing for those people that can do it and want to do it. Some people, I think that people go through stages. Sometimes sitting in contemplation for even several hours a day is what is natural and helpful for that person. For another person, sometimes it's studying or just being alert or karma yoga. You have to deal with the mind as the mind is. So say if you say the only way that you can gain that nishta is if you sit, then I don't agree with that. I think there'll be times when that's what you want to do is sit. There's other times when other things are more important. Maybe there's times when just prayer is important. Prayer to Ishwara is important. So it depends.
You know, Carol, this, like, one thing that I thought of recently that might be helpful, like you guys were talking about, you both can have a vritti of the cedar chest, you know, because there's some Vyavaharaka there. You know, mm-hmm. something. But, you know, like, to me, this is helpful to think about this. You have the vritti, and we all have a vritti of this, because we have human minds, so we mm-hmm. have the same type of mind, mm-hmm. so we can share that, in a sense, share that reality. But, you know, like, there's some creatures that can't see color, and some animals have a greater sense of smell, and I think I heard that horseshoe crabs see, like, 20 of an object of which we see only one. And so then I think, when I start sort of thinking about that, that gives me a sense, like, what is really here? You know, my mind is a human mind, and it's programmed to see certain things in a certain way so that this whole body functions within this duality.
Right.
But what's actually here is, you know, we ask Tibby, she'll tell us something completely different, you know.
Right.
So that's, I think, sort of helpful, maybe, in kind of...
The only thing I don't want you to fall into is what we call solipsism.
No, 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 I know what that is.
You know, where you think that the only thing here is my vritti.
No. It's my vritti's interpretation of Ishwara's knowledge.
Yeah, right? There's something bigger. That's a good way. Your interpretation of Ishwara's knowledge. So, but that's exactly what we mean by the vyavahara.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're saying that the only reality is my own personal vritti.
No.
You know, funny. And that's not gonna fly either. That's what we call solipsism.
Yeah.
I wasn't saying that.
I know. I mean, I hope not. That's what I was looking for, to make sure you weren't when I was talking to you. Then we done? No.
What?
So, are we done?
No, I don't know.
Let's be.
sorry. You go ahead.
Yeah, I mean,
I was just going to ask.
I don't feel I'm done. Because, like, you know, so there's the seated chest over there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a thought formation,
thought modification.
Thought modification.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see that, like, the thought modification is in the consciousness, illuminated into the consciousness, by consciousness. But what am I going to do with this now, then?
What do you mean?
Well, I can say it's Mithya. I can take it apart and on. But isn't that another thought modification again?
Yeah, but it's also a fact. That type of thinking is only being used to show that this is Mithya. And if we say it's Mithya, if you say something is Mithya, that has to mean something. You're using the word, right? This is mithya. So what does that mean? So then you can use more words to describe what it means. If you know what it means, then all you have to say is it's mithya. Mm-hmm.
But
if you don't,
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, got it. Yeah, because that sounded to me like another thing to do.
Yeah.
No, nothing to do. Once you understand mithya, what is it?
I mean, that's true. Like, say you have any vritti or any experience that you're having, you can say it's mithya or it's Brahman, or you don't even have to say the words because you know it.
Right.
You know it before you say any word. You don't even have to think about it because it's knowledge. And that's nishta, in fact. You don't have to think about it because you know it. It's You've assimilated it, you see it, it's clear. You don't have to be talking or thinking or anything. But you use words and unfoldment and all of these things to make something clear when it's not clear. You know, or you pull your mind back. You know, what you call nididhyasana. You make your mind see because it's not seeing. So you do nididhyasana. Otherwise, it is just that's natural. You don't think about doing nididhyasana because you're seeing.
But isn't real nishta seeing, knowing that all of this, which is mithya, which we label as mithya, which is mithya, it has for its being Satyam. I mean, isn't that really, really Jnanam? I mean, really Jnanam.
That's it. And that's a aproksha. You know, Vidyaranya uses the example. He says, you know, the Ajnani, just as for the Ajnani, they don't have to walk around saying, I am the body. I am the body. I am the body. They have Nischa Jnanam, Ajnanam, in that. They don't have to remind themselves of it. They don't have to.
Scared
me.
They don't have to remind themselves of it, or,
yeah.
You know, everything, their whole orientation
yeah.
is based on that,
right.
You know. And for the jnani, their whole orientation, everything is based upon on the wholeness of yourself.
Yeah.
You don't think about it.
Right.
It's. And the self is aproksha. The self is aproksha for the Ajnani also, but it's just, it has superimposed on it all the upadis. But the self is aproksha. What about when the upadis are not superimposed upon it anymore? Or where the ahankara isn't identifying yourself in terms of the conditioning adjuncts. It's not doing that anymore. When it's not doing that, then then yourself isn't locked in by your buddhi to be just in the form of this body. You recognize the sut of yourself is not contained. Your consciousness, not knowership, consciousness is not a knower, but consciousness is not contained. You are not contained. You recognize that. I mean, in terms of yoga, I mean, Advaita Vedanta also uses yoga, but they don't use it for the same reason. They don't use it to generate an experience. They use it to recognize a reality. It's very different. Even though they're using the same techniques.
Yes. So you can use them the same method,
mm-hmm.
but the intention.
And what they're actually recognizing is different.
Yeah.
What they're doing with it is different. But they use it. All of it. It's all taught. It's all taught in the Gita. Okay. Let's call it a night. Now I'm quitting now.
Well, thank you. That was great.